So when people ask you about yourself, how do you describe yourself? What do you say you are? Now, you know, when people ask, sort of, what are you? I sometimes describe myself as a software engineer, or I'm working in software training, or other times I might describe myself as father, as granddad these days. You may describe yourself in different ways. You may describe yourself as retired, you may be a dot worker, you may be a nurse, you may be a builder, you may be a student, you may be all of those different things. You probably don't describe yourself as a royal priest or a living stone. Probably not the first thing that comes to mind, but that's what the Bible says you are. Now, you saw the children ably demonstrate a little while ago the importance of solid foundations. And that passage from Peter describes Jesus as the cornerstone of God's temple. So, have we got any bricklayers here? Any builders? No. Okay. Nobody's built their own house, or no. Maybe they have. What's the importance of a cornerstone? Well, did you know that Winston Churchill was a bricklayer? He was an amateur bricklayer. In fact, he was at one point. He was invited to join the Bricklayers Trade Union. Although that was a bit controversial. But anyway, so Winston Churchill was in his spare time a bricklayer. He built some stuff. If you ever visit Chartwell, which is an interesting place to build, the house he had, interesting place to build, interesting place to visit. You'll see something he at least helped to build. And apparently in January 1952, he was asked to lay a foundation stone in Bristol, where he was Chancellor of the University. And so he picked up these silver trowel that they have for these occasions, and then he looked at the foundation stone. And to the surprise of everybody, he put the trowel down and said, the stone isn't level. Except he probably didn't say that. The stone isn't level. Or however Winston Churchill was. And so the rather red-faced officials got out some measuring instruments, and they discovered he was right. It wasn't level. So solemnly they adjusted the new foundation stone, and after that, Winston Churchill picked up the trowel, nodded his approval, and smoothed off the cement. He knew the importance of a cornerstone, of a foundation stone. Now, if you go to Wikipedia, source of all knowledge these days, tells you that a cornerstone, or a foundation stone, or a setting stone, it's the first stone that's set in the construction of foundations. Now, the important thing is that all of the other stones will be set in reference to that one. So it determines the position of everything else. So if it is not in the right place, if it's wonky, the entire building will be wonky. If it's in the wrong direction, the building will be in the wrong direction, because everything is set in reference to that cornerstone. So Peter, writing that letter, obviously knew more about building than I did, because Jesus as the cornerstone, the foundation, the place that gives us the reference, that sets us in the right direction for the rest of our lives, for the rest of the building, a really appropriate metaphor. In fact, I discovered there's another kind of cornerstone. You may have heard Christ is the head of the corner. Is in one of Paul's letters, I think. So it's like, well, I've always wondered about that. There is another kind of cornerstone. educational this morning, isn't it? Which is the cornerstone that goes at the top of the wall. And that cornerstone is the one that holds things together at the top and stops things falling apart. Jesus stopping things falling apart. These folks really knew what they were talking about. So Jesus is the cornerstone on which we build our lives, that sets our direction. And Jesus is the cornerstone that holds things together. What a picture. But more than that, we're told that we're living stones. I'm definitely not a builder, but even I know that if you're trying to build, you can't just pile stones up. You end up with a heap. You don't end up with a building. They have to be carefully shaped and placed. Now bricks, of course, are all churned out of the same mould. They're uniform size and shape, and that's probably fairly easy to build with. But building with stone is rather different. And yeah, the blocks have to be sawn and chiselled, and not everyone has the same function. So you look at a stone building, you look at a cathedral, whatever. So that there's the large, strong stones that are holding up buttresses. There's the small, finely worked ones that are a decoration. Some are beautiful and decorative, and some are really structural, and there are some that are never seen. There's those stones that are right at the core. And in the same way, we are living stones building the temple. That's what we're told. And we have to be shaped, and we have to be placed, and we have to be fit into the position, and some will be the ones holding everything else up, and some will be those who are right at the core, maybe not seen but just as important, and some will be on display and some won't. I remember years ago visiting Ely Cathedral, and in Ely Cathedral you can go up the central tower there, and walk around inside. Now, it's not somewhere that people would normally visit, you know, sort of for hundreds of years, probably people never really went there except maybe the odd person. But I was really struck by the fact that even up there, right in the sort of inside of the tower, where you couldn't see it from the ground looking up, you know, it was just something that was way up there. You could see that the stonemasons had paid just as much attention to every detail of the stones that couldn't be seen as the ones that could. So, in the same way, in being shaped into God's temple, God pays as much attention to those things that can't be seen. Those masons knew that. You know, they were building for the Lord. And God pays as much attention to us and to shaping us and to using us and to placing us, whether we're the things that are on show every day or whether we are just an ordinary stone somewhere in the middle of a wall. You know, some of those stones in the middle that are holding the walls up, some people may consider them rubble. You know, they may not be as pretty and as smooth as those on the outside, but they are vital, holding things into place inside. And if you look at cathedrals, look at impressive buildings, you know, look at St. Paul's, Canterbury Cathedrals, Peter's in Rome, whatever, they're all impressive. but they're dead without people in them. They're just piles of stone, but we are stones in the building. We are the temple. But we're also not only the living stones that make up the temple, we're also serving in the temple as priests. It's not just a building. We are, if we are living stones, then unlike St. Paul's or Canterbury Cathedral or whatever, if we're living stones, it's a living building, one that grows and adapts. And that's a challenge. Sometimes it's easy to be, I'm fixed, I'm set in my ways, I'm a stone, I'm not moving, I'm not doing anything else. But being a living stone, one that grows and adapts, is another challenge. But there is something else that struck me about this passage. There's something else about many stones in buildings and elsewhere. Often, on stones, you see things carved. You see, people have for hundreds of years had the inclination to go and scratch their names into buildings. Now, we think graffiti is a modern problem. We went to Canterbury Cathedral not that long ago, and actually, if you sort of, as you go round, you'll see people have been scratching their name into the building for hundreds of years. You know, there's, John Smith, 1642 or something. People have been doing that. Why do they do that? Because they want their name to be known permanently. They scratch their initials. They want their name to be known. And there is something about carving your name in stone that's important, isn't it? We think about the Ten Commandments. They were handed down on tablets of stone. There was a degree of permanence. These are rules that last forever. And in the same way, putting names on stone, we do it in headstones, in churchyards, we do it on war memorials. We talk about, their name lives forevermore. We want our names to be known. We want our names to be remembered. And there is something powerful about names and permanence of names. It's strange. Giving a name to something allows you to see it for the first time. Something that you've never noticed before, you give it a name and suddenly you can see it. I came across a word a while ago, the word smuse. Anybody know what a smuse is? Yeah? Anybody ever heard the name smuse? S-M-E-U-S-E. Here's something. Once I've told you what it is, you'll see them all over the place. A smuse is that little path through a fence or a hedge, often that an animal has made. Okay, that's a smuse. Now, having told you that, I bet the next time you walk past a hedge, you'll go, oh, there's a smuse there. And giving a name to something is powerful. Giving a name to something is powerful. The Christian mission became the Salvation Army. And suddenly something that was, yeah, successful, but rather generic, became something that captured the imagination of people in a new way. Names are powerful. And there is an association, as I say, with names and stones. Back in the book of Exodus, where it's describing creating the priestly garments. And remember, we are royal priests. So creating the priestly garments that Aaron wore. They talk about making the chess piece. It said, then with great skill and care, make a chess piece to be worn for seeking a decision from God. Make it match the ephod using finely woven linen embroidered with gold and with purple, with blue, purple and scarlet thread. Make the chess piece of a single piece of cloth folded to form a pouch 9 inches square and mount 4 rows of gemstones on it. The first row will contain a red carnelian, a pale green peridot and an emerald. The second, a turquoise, a blue lapis lazuli and a white moonstone. Third, an orange jacinth, agate, and purple amethyst, and the fourth, blue-green beryl, onyx, and green jasper. And all these stones will be set in gold filigree. And each stone will represent one of the 12 sons of Israel, and the name of that tribe will be engraved on it like a seal. The names of the tribes of Israel being carried by the priests into the presence of God, seeking God's decision. The names were important. The names set in stone, set on stones, were important. Permanent reminder of who they were. And actually, at the other end of the Bible, in the book of Revelation, there's a rather slightly puzzling verse. In the letters to the churches, and not entirely clear what it's referring to, but it says this. It says, "And I will give to each one a white stone, and on the stone will be engraved a new name that no one understands except the one who receives it." The promise of God giving us a new name that we'll understand, that's been given to us by God and engraved on a stone. This is it. This is who you truly are. This is permanent. Now, this is something that's set in stone. So, maybe this morning I want to remind you again. It said, you are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. Once you had no identity as a people, now you are God's people. Once you received no mercy, now you have received God's mercy. Well, maybe you're not feeling that strong this morning. You're not feeling particularly stone-like. Maybe you're feeling a bit wobbly. Maybe you're not set in entirely the right direction. But if you come to Christ, that promise there, it says you are part of the temple building, anchored on the cornerstone of Jesus and surrounded and supported by other living stones. Perhaps you don't feel that important, but you're a royal priest. Maybe you don't feel that you belong, but you're part of a holy nation. maybe you don't really know who you are or where you're going right now. But God offers you a new name with a clear direction. And it's not what you are or what you've done that matters to God. It's who you are. And this passage that we read from Peter, which said, once you had no identity as people, now you are God's people. Once you received no mercy, now you have received God's mercy. A few verses later, Peter picks up that same kind of theme. And this is what he said at the end of that chapter. He said, once you were like sheep who wandered away, but now you have turned to your shepherd, the guardian of your souls. Now, in a moment, the band are going to play the piece, Guardian of My Soul. This is the place in Scripture where that title comes from. But more than that, as you listen to the music, you may not know the words that are associated with what the band plays. Part of it is based on the tune of Aurelia, O Jesus, I Have Promised, which again contains the word guardian of my soul. But the main part of this, the words are these. It says, I worship you, God's only Son, who took my sins to the cross, so I could be completely free to follow where you lead. O Lord, your wounds are now my healing, and I am wholly yours. You know my name and where I'm going, guardian of my soul. I'll follow you, God's only Son, along the road to the cross. No other place can I find grace unfathomed and unflawed. And as I reach the hill of Calvary and see your open arms, I'll know my name and where I'm going, guardian of my soul. You're called to be living stones, royal priests, but you're called to have a new name, to be part of God's people. I found that really powerful. And as I reach the hill of Calvary and see your open arms, at that point where we surrender ourselves to God, that's the point at which I'll know my name and where I'm going.